Kansas Chiefs fans are reliving the horror of a shooting at yesterday's Super Bowl victory parade.
I hear people, get down, get down, get down, get down. It's not fireworks. Get down. My mom's 71 years old, okay? She's like, I can't get down.
A local radio DJ was killed, more than 20 wounded, among them children. Police say they've detained three suspects. U.S. intelligence says Russia is working on a new weapon in space to knock out American satellites. CBS's Nancy Cordes.
The use of any nuclear weapon in space would be a violation of what's known as the Outer Space Treaty of 1967.
Israeli troops entered a medical center in Khan Yunis today, searching for the remains of hostages taken by Hamas. The BBC's Sebastian Usher.
This is the main hospital in southern Gaza, and it's still just about being functioning despite all the issues. And over the last couple of days, there's been evacuation orders by the Israeli forces.
CBS News Brief. I'm Deborah Rodriguez.
Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. A last-minute amendment to Governor Evers' political maps bill might complicate elections this year. The legislature passed his maps the other day, but they wouldn't take effect until the November election. Democratic State Senator Melissa Agard says that means any race before then would be held in unconstitutional districts.
Speaker Voss is in the middle of a recall, and we're not sure what maps he would run us. Additionally, in the Senate, Lena Taylor was just appointed to be a judge in Milwaukee. So we're down one member in the state Senate.
Evers has said he'd sign off on the maps as long as they weren't changed. Democratic state lawmakers want to expand paid family leave. A new bill would extend the current 2 weeks a year to 14 and allow more reasons for people to take time off. The bill would also remove the exemption for small businesses. I'm Terry Bell, Civic Media News. Now here's what you need to know closer to home.
For WAUK News, I'm Stuart J. Waddles. The snow accumulation is hit or miss in the area. Some of southeastern Wisconsin is experiencing wintry conditions, with folks further north getting a buildup of the white stuff. Almost everywhere is a wet, slushy mess. Roads impacted are slick. The National Weather Service had the winter weather advisory, including Waukesha and Milwaukee counties, but excluding Racine, Kenosha, and the counties along the state line. Forecasters say it'll be around 3 inches on the top end and just rain for others. After 4 years, Wauwatosa's Rosebud Cinema is open again. Yesterday's first-run screening sold out. The Rosebud never reopened after closing during the coronavirus outbreak. After purchasing the Rosebud, the neighborhood theater group spent several months attempting to reopen the venue. Beer, wine, pizza, and the standard movie snacks are available at the new theater. And that's what you need to know. I'm Stuart J. Waddles, WAUK News.
The Devil's Advocates Radio Show.
Jim from Racine, welcome. What do you got for us?
Hey, Jim.
I voted for Reagan back in the day. I guess I've been supporting more of the Democratic Party for the last 40 years or so, but people don't say, oh, man, she's a Republican, she's a Democrat, she's whatever. I'm a human being. All these other things aren't important. We need to unite against a bigger threat. I think the threat is us becoming a dictatorship. They want us to fail.
The Devil's Advocates Radio Show. Weekday afternoons from 4 until 6 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
The Brewers get things started. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Brewers pitchers and catchers reporting today for the start of spring training in Arizona. After 9 years as the team's bench coach, Pat Murphy taking over as the team's manager. Brewers GM Matt Arnold made a trade, sending lefty Clayton Andrews to the Yankees. And in return, they pick up Joshua Quezada. He's a young right-hander out of the Dominican Republic. College basketball, the Wisconsin Badgers women's team hosted number 14th-ranked Indiana, but fell short 68-54. NBA, the Bucks play the Grizzlies in Memphis. Milwaukee coming off that loss to the Heat. They struggled with shooting, defense, and unable to create turnovers. Bucks head coach Doc Rivers explains why.
You're not getting a lot of transition. You're not getting the ball out and running. Everything was half court, and we got stuck in the muck in half court. We never slowed them down offensively to ever have anything on our end.
That's the Bucks' Doc Rivers. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
A little light rain and snow this morning, then gradual clearing. We'll get to a high of 37 by late this morning, and then temperatures are going to drop back into the low 30s here by late afternoon. The wind, northwest 10 to 20, gusting to 30 or 35 here by later today. Tonight, cloudy 24. Tomorrow, mostly cloudy 31. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Temperature now 30.
Radio keeps your community informed, entertained, and connected. It's what we're all about at the Civic Media Network of local radio stations.
We're having fun and moving fast to preserve hometown radio across Wisconsin.
This includes a commitment to news.
Now we want to invite you to join Civic Media's exclusive Facebook group, Wisconsin Breaking News. It's a place to share your community's news and chat with others from across the state about it.
Join the Facebook group, Wisconsin Breaking News, today. It's the perfect companion to your local Civic Media radio station. Did you know this local radio station is part of Civic Media? Learn more about the entire network at civicmedia.us. Your home of the Earl Ingram Show, weekday mornings from 8 till 10 on The Shaw, 540 AM and 101.1 FM WAUK.
Hey, what's happening?
Brother, what's up?
This is a big party, man.
Good morning and welcome to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can follow us at 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. Good morning to you, Calvin. How you doing, man?
I'm doing good, Earl. It was a little slushy on my way in, but I made it. How are you?
Yeah, man, I'm doing fine. And that's Calvin. He'll be manning the phones as always. And, you know, it's, hey, man, it's the middle of February. People are acting like, come on, man, it's a slight downpour. And it'll be gone by this afternoon, man. It's not bad at all here in Waukesha, man. Barely a trace.
Yeah, I know. We forget because of the 45s we had last week or even just yesterday.
Oh, yeah. And Milwaukee is not so bad either. But anyway, I want to welcome my first guest, and he's a good friend. And, you know, what can I say about none other than Mr. Reggie Jackson, who is, you know, just an all-around wonderful, wonderful guy, you know, as gentle and kind a person, I think, as I know. That's not talking about all the great things that he's done and continues to do with his life, but just a gentle soul, man. It's good to see you, brother. It's been a while.
Yeah, it's great to see you as well, Earl. Thank you for the invitation.
Yeah, I don't know. Why don't you pull the microphone a little closer to you? All right. So Reggie Jackson is a historian by trade, and you know, you're a griot, man. Tell the people what a griot is.
Griot is, the term is borrowed from West African tradition. So within West African societies, you had people who were trained from the time they were very young children into adulthood to become griots. And those were the keepers of the history of their communities. You know, people oftentimes say they were storytellers. That was part of what they did, but they were historians. They knew not only the history of the entire community, they knew the history of each family within the community. So if you wanted to know about your great-great-great-grandfather, they would tell you something about your great-great-great-grandfather.
So when did you decide you wanted to be a historian, man? How old were you?
You know, when I was in high school, I started thinking about, you know, what do I want to do as an adult? And I thought, you know, maybe I want to be a history teacher. And so, you know, I started pursuing that once I got out of high school because I wanted to teach people things that I had been learning myself.
But man, that just, you know, a history teacher. I mean, I can understand that in the 30s and the 20s, but something about history clearly piqued your curiosity.
Well, you know, for me, Earl, what makes history important for me is this is all very personal. You know, I'm telling the stories of my family, my ancestors. So I tell people, you know, when I'm talking about slavery, I know the history of my family's enslavement. I can tell you the name of the people that enslaved my family. I know their entire family history going all the way back to Germany before they even came to the U.S., to Virginia and South Carolina and enslaved my family. I know that history. that's part of my history as well as their history. And to me, I look at, you know, we talk about Black History Month. I look at Black history differently than many people do. I look at it as just history. You know, it's not Black history. It's Blacks in history. It's including those stories of Blacks in history. Any part of American history you look at where we're present for, right? Those stories are there. We've just ignored those stories for so long that we don't realize that we've missed out on a lot of learning.
So you are a nationally renowned, griot and history teacher. And you've won so many different awards, man. As I was kind of going over the different awards that you've received, they're so numerous. You, again, traveled the country in your lectures. You're a writer. You're an author. All these different things, and all of them dealing with history. As I was putting together this month's Black History, and I couldn't help but think about you and having you on. You and I you've been on with me years past, and I miss having you on. And you know, you're one of the most knowledgeable guys that has done this. You've traveled the state of Wisconsin teaching Black history. Let's talk about that.
Yes, I have, Earl.
The entire state.
You know, in the last 20 years, I've been to nearly 60 communities around the state of Wisconsin, places I never thought I would ever visit, you know, as a young person. When I was a child growing up in Milwaukee, all the way through high school, I never went anywhere in Wisconsin other than Milwaukee. Never visited any other cities.
You sound like me.
Yeah, I didn't even have the pleasure of making that trip to the Capitol in Madison when I was in elementary school. Our school never went to the Capitol. So I didn't know anything about the state of Wisconsin. And as I started to travel and go to all of these different places, the thing that was best for me, that made me feel really good inside, was the diversity of the state of Wisconsin in terms of not diversity looking at, you know, race, ethnicity, things, but diversity of lived experiences, how people in different parts of the state have had different experiences based on where they live. You know, the people in La Crosse, people in Wausau, people in Janesville, people in Platteville, all these places I've gone. You know, I've heard the stories of those places. And it's fascinating because one thing that we don't learn in school typically is local history. And I was able to learn some local history about some of those places I've been. And it's just very fascinating to me.
You know, in many of those places, very few Blacks, if any.
Yeah, absolutely.
So how is it possible then that a Black man goes into an area, segregated area, where people have seen people of color, maybe passing through or maybe on television, but on a daily basis do not see physically people of color? How are you able to go to these different places and have a conversation and a dialogue with them about race and those kind of things?
Well, when I first started doing this work with a business partner of mine under our company, Nurture and Diversity Partners, which I'm no longer part of, one of the things that everybody told us when we started talking about traveling around the state of Wisconsin about my race and racism, everybody told us, well, you're crazy, Earl. They said, you guys are never going to make any money. Reggie, they're going to run you out of town. You're going to need a bodyguard. I heard that constantly. My brother even tried to get me to hire him as my bodyguard. And I told him I don't need a bodyguard because I've been welcomed with open arms to these places, Earl. You know, I go to places, I talk about these things in a very open and honest way. You know, I don't believe in trying to make people feel guilty or shame people. That's not my approach. My approach is just to give you the unvarnished truth and let you figure out what to do with it. And that's what I've done. And people appreciate that. And people, you know, through word of mouth, talk to other people they know, and as a result, people from so many different places have invited me to come in and talk.
Yeah, and you know, you have the type of demeanor that's diffusing. It's just who you are, and maybe that makes it a little bit easier. But let me ask you, because one of the things that you do in what you do is diversity, equity, and inclusion. What does that mean to you? Because it means something different to other people. What does diversity, equity, and inclusion mean to Reggie Jackson?
Diversity, equity, and inclusion is kind of a framework of talking about American society from the perspective of hearing the voices of people, like voices have been silenced for the most part, you know, bringing in diverse voices, diverse viewpoints, diverse perspectives into the spaces where we have conversations about how our country runs in a way that, you know, was absent from, you know, our society for many, many years. And I think part of what made that change is, you know, when Trayvon Martin was murdered in Sanford, Florida, Black Lives Matter movement, you know, came out of that, and people started talking about issues related to, you know, the Black people for the first time in American history in a way, in terms of wanting to learn those things. And then the murder of George Floyd just made it explode. And so more and more people wanted to invest in doing equity-related work, making our country a more equitable place for everybody. And so they started investing in diversity, equity, inclusion training, you know, seminars, book clubs, things of that nature.
So if you're just joining us, my guest is Reggie Jackson. He is a griot. He's a historian, award-winning historian, nationally renowned. And he's right here in our city. And more than anything else, I love the fact that he and I are friends. And so, Reggie, so you're born in Mississippi. You didn't get to live very long in Mississippi before your family moved here, but you knew the history of it.
Yeah, absolutely. I was born in a little town called Charleston, Mississippi, right in the heart of the Mississippi Delta, the northern part of the Mississippi Delta, 70 miles south of Memphis, 30 miles from Ole Miss, Oxford, Mississippi.
What year?
1965.
Okay, 1965.
And my family moved to Milwaukee the summer of 1973.
So 1965, civil rights situation was probably right in the middle of its heyday. You know, Dr. King and the fights and all those kind of things, the marches, all those things were taking place when you were born.
Yeah, actually, Dr. King marched in my hometown the summer that I was born. And I was there, Earl. My mother went to see Dr. King march. And, you know, I was in her womb at the time. So I tell people I marched with Dr. King, too. I was, you know, inside of my mother's womb, but I was there. I was present at that moment.
You know, I want people to know that we're going to cover quite a few different things. You're going to be on with me the next three weeks. And I want people to really get the feel of who you are. And again, what it is about Reggie Jackson that can communicate with people across the state of Wisconsin about these issues that sometimes people very, you know, guarded about and afraid to have the discussions. But as your shirt states, say it straight or it comes out crooked.
Yes, sir. So that, what does that mean? That's a new initiative. I'm starting a podcast. That's the title of the podcast, Say It Straight or It Comes Out Crooked. Because I believe that we have to have open, honest conversation where people are not afraid of speaking their truth. And I think a lot of people are afraid of stepping on people's toes because of their views. And I think that is just very bad for our society. We need to have people that are willing to be honest.
All right.
Speak the truth.
844-967-2789 is the number. My guess is the one and only Reggie Jackson.
You're listening to The Shaw, WAUK. Thrivent is growing in southeastern Wisconsin and seeking financial advisors. If a career with independence, impact, and purpose is important to you, you should explore the Thrivent Financial Advisor opportunity. Build your own business. Use your values, drive, and skills to help others. You'll get unsurpassed support from Thrivent, a Fortune 500 company. To learn more, send your contact information to wicareers@thrivent.com.
There's something magical about unboxing. When you unbox BritBox, you uncover a world of British entertainment. Stream the UK's most brilliant series, including new and upcoming seasons of Shetland, Father Brown, and Death in Paradise. Plus new originals like Payback, Irvin Welsh's Crime, and Archie, the story of Hollywood's greatest leading man, Cary Grant. Unbox BritBox and escape to the best of British TV. Stream with a free trial at BritBox.com.
The Shaw, WAUK.
Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. I'm joined by my good friend and historian, Reggie Jackson, nationally renowned and award-winning historian, is here this morning. You know, Reggie, diversity, equity, and inclusion is a buzzword today that really is under assault, and it's they're trying to wipe it out as if it never should have ever existed. What's going on with that, man?
Well, you know, what we call diversity, equity, inclusion nowadays, Earl, back when I was a teacher, they used to call cultural competency. And, you know, it's been called cultural diversity, a variety of different names over the course of time. And it's transitioned into kind of the space nowadays is a much more inclusive space. It includes many more topics. It used to be mostly about race, but, you know, it started to expand into issues about gender, you know, sexual orientation, a variety of immigration status. So there's a lot of things encompassing diversity, equity, inclusion work. And a lot of it is directly related to really just providing equitable spaces. So, you know, people talk about equality. It used to be all about equality, you know, making things equal. But people realize that equal isn't necessarily what we need. We need what people call equity. And so the big difference between equality and equity is when you're working towards equality, you're giving everybody the same supports. You know, there's these famous the pictures they have of people at a soccer game or baseball game standing behind a fence. And, you know, people are different heights. And so, you know, some people can see over the fence, some people can't see over the fence. And so what they do is they bring boxes in that are the same height and everybody gets the same box. But the person who's the shortest, the box isn't tall enough for them to see over the fence. The person that's the tallest, they can see over the fence easily. And so people said that that's not how it should work. Give them a box that'll be the box that fits each group. So the shortest person gets the tallest box. The tallest person gets the shortest box. So everybody has access to what they're trying to get. And so that's what equity is about giving access to things that people haven't had access to.
So it's not about taking away from somebody else and somebody else losing something. There can be equity without taking something from someone else, is what you're saying.
Right, right. And, you know, it's not a zero-sum game. Many people think that it is, that if one group of people get something, then another group of people has to lose something. That's not how the world works, Earl. And, you know, I move towards, you know, not just equality and equity. I want to move towards justice. And justice is when we remove the barriers that are preventing people from having access to things that they want. And that ultimately is my goal, is to move into the space of justice, because justice is a space where you don't have to worry about giving people supports any longer. You remove the barriers that make them need those supports to begin with.
So when did this assault on diversity, equity, and inclusion came about over the last couple of years? I do know that affirmative action is under assault as well. And so clearly there are people who are saying enough of this already. You're discriminating against other people. You're discriminating against white people, and you're giving black people advantages, and that's not the way it's supposed to be. And Dr. King was opposed to that. Why are you saying that we should be doing this now? Your thoughts on that way of thinking?
I think that's a misinterpretation of what people are doing. I think most people that say those things are people that have not invested time in talking to people that do diversity, equity, inclusion work to see how they do it and what they're doing with it. They just make assumptions about it based on what they've heard somebody say. And it's not based on the reality. I always say that, listen, you can't criticize something that you have no experience with. If you don't have any experience with this type of work being in these spaces, then how do you know what they're doing and saying that you can criticize these people? And to me, the criticism, you know, in terms of where it is right now, the attacks on DE&I, the attacks on what people call critical race theory, even though it isn't critical race theory, but they've basically made people think that everything related to social and environmental justice is critical race theory. And critical race theory is a very specific set of topics that's taught only in law school. You can't teach critical race theory in third grade, or people think that you can, but you can't. And so these attacks, you know, the essence of what where they are right now, if you go back to September of 2020, you found President Trump signed an executive order banning the use of what he called divisive concepts in the U.S. government. So, for instance, we had a contract to do some training for the U.S. Marine Corps on a topic that they asked us to talk about, and that contract was canceled because it was considered to be part of these divisive concepts. And we were just going to do a talk, Earl, on implicit bias. That's all it was about, implicit bias. And we couldn't do it because that was considered to be a divisive topic. And so, you know, these attacks are consistent. But to me, it's just a continuation of the way America has treated these topics over a long period of time. This is just the latest version of attacks on us trying to make progress racially in the United States. You know, back in the 1950s, when the NAACP rather, fought to get the U.S. Supreme Court to end segregated schools, there was an automatic backlash against that. And that attempt, you know, continued for a number of years. People don't know that, you know, the Brown versus Board of Education decision did not end segregated schools because those southern states like my home state of Mississippi said, we're not going to do it. In fact, Mississippi didn't integrate their schools until 1969. And they did it only because they were forced to. The Supreme Court, you know, issued a new decision saying, you know, what we said in Brown versus Board of Education about, you know, integrate the schools with all deliberate speed. Well, you know, time has run out. Do it now. And people fought tooth and nail to keep those segregated schools. So that was an effort to push back on something that was similar to what we call DE&I today. It's always present. It's a never-ending part of American society. People have created, you know, a society that gives privilege to a certain class of people, and they want to maintain that privilege and those powers over other people. And when those people push back against that, then there's always, you know, somebody pushing back against it in some way, shape, or form. And this is just the latest iteration of that, Earl.
All right. 844-967-2789 is the number. My guess is a nationally renowned historian, Reggie Jackson of Reggie Jackson, Inc., and Say It Straight or It Comes Out Crooked. I'm so honored to have him back with me after a number of years. We got to get used to having Reggie back around. News, weather, and sports.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. First Lady Jill Biden is set to travel to Wisconsin tomorrow. She plans to visit Green Bay. The White House says she'll attend a roundtable discussion on efforts to expand career-connecting learning in high school and college. The worker shortage is affecting all aspects of life, including the mail. Low staffing is linked to delays in rural postal service. Bryce Shanklin is a mail carrier who says more people should consider working at the post office.
I'd never have to worry about being laid off. The other benefit is all the federal holidays, ones like President's Day. Most people don't get that off. And then your health benefits. I haven't seen better health insurance than what I have with the federal government.
Shanklin admits the labor shortage makes it hard to split overloaded routes, which leads to slow service. I'm Terry Bell, Civic Media News. Now here's what you need to know closer to home.
For WAUK News, I'm Stuart J. Waddles. The recent discovery of an elderly man's lifeless body in his New Berlin home has left lingering questions. New Berlin police say the 77-year-old man found dead was acquainted with a 42-year-old partially clothed woman who was discovered running through backyards in Cedarburg. Authorities say she was the one who alerted them to the man's death. While New Berlin police have classified the man's death as suspicious, they've refrained from calling it a homicide. They say they're waiting for the medical examiner to determine the cause of death. The First Lady is in Titletown tomorrow. Jill Biden will visit Green Bay tomorrow, scheduled to speak about college and career readiness at the Rail Yard Innovation District. It's another sign Democrats consider Wisconsin important in the upcoming election. The latest Marquette Law School poll shows President Biden has a 41% approval rate. And that's what you need to know. I'm Stuart J. Waddles, WAUK News.
The Todd Alba Show.
You look at Taylor Swift. She fought off the bitterness of defeat when she lost her records, when she was kind of duped by a manager. People who told her she'd never amount to anything. But it doesn't matter if you like her music or not. I'm a fan of anyone. Doesn't matter whether they're an artist or an athlete or just a common Jane or Joe. If you've overcome something in your life, you're a winner. If you've made it through, that's what it's all about.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekdays, noon till 2. On your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Pete with the 60-second Showbiz Beat. An Oklahoma country music station is refusing to play Beyoncé's two new songs that dropped Super Bowl Sunday. The popular R&B singer released Texas Hold'em and 16 Carriages, calling them country songs. Country music station KYKC is facing a backlash from listeners after the station's program director refused to play them, saying KYKC is a country music station and we will not play Beyoncé. Sorry, but I can't help ask the question that's on everyone's mind, why on earth is Beyoncé recording country music songs? On the heels of Valentine's Day, Damon Wayans Jr., star of the new Netflix film Players, says sex scenes in rom-coms are unrealistic. Wayans Jr. says sex is not always amazing in real life, and he would like to see sex scenes in movies reflect that. Personally, I totally disagree. Rom-coms are fantasy anyway, and no one wants to hear lines like, your knee is on my hair, or damn girl, are those your mom's underpants? For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, every night between 7 and 9 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
A little light rain and snow this morning, then gradual clearing. We'll get to a high of 37 by late this morning, and then temperatures are going to drop back into the low 30s here by late afternoon. The wind, northwest 10 to 20, gusting to 30 or 35 here by later today. Tonight, cloudy 24. Tomorrow, mostly cloudy 31. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Temperature now 30.
The Todd Alba Show.
I'm Trigvi Olsen. Steven from Green Bay. Go ahead.
The city of Green Bay is one of the best places in Wisconsin to live. Plenty of people that are Wisconsin nice.
Totally agree. Green Bay is kind of swing territory between the two parties, but people in Green Bay work together. I mean, people aren't asking themselves, am I wearing a red hat or a blue hat? They're wearing green and gold hats.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekdays, noon till 2. On your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Waukesha, home of Les Paul, our awesome farmers market, and the Shaw. 540 AM and 101.1 FM, WAUK.
All right, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-6607. 2789. You can text us at that same number. My guest is Reggie Jackson of Reggie Jackson, Inc., and Say It Straight or It Comes Out Crooked. Nationally renowned historian has agreed to join us today and in the next couple of weeks. I'm really excited to have him on. There are not many people who can tell history in the manner that Reggie does. American history as well as African-American history. Let's go to the phone lines and Stephen from Green Bay. Hey, Stephen, thank you very much for the call. Your thoughts?
So I have a question for Mr. Jackson this morning. You guys are talking about diversity, equity, inclusion, and the misconceptions around that phrase. And I had a thought while you guys were talking about this, and I just wanted to kind of know your thoughts about it. As a human race, it's easier to be scared of things that we don't understand than it is to embrace them and learn them. And I feel like that's what we're doing with diversity, equity, inclusion. We're making it this big, scary word, and we're trying to scare people away from it instead of actually sitting down and listening and learning about it. And I think that's contributing to part of the problem and the misconceptions is that instead of learning about DEI, we are instead trying to scare people away from it with all these falsehoods.
Well, Stephen, I agree with you. I think that people are trying to scare people away from it with falsehoods. You know, people like me that do this work, you know, there's a very specific way that we do this work, and everybody does it their own particular way. I use history as the basic foundation of my work, you know, providing historical context. And I think that, you know, as I was sharing with Earl earlier, you know, one of the things that we don't do very well in this country is teach our own history, right? We leave out a lot of the ugly parts of American history. And as a result of that, most Americans are miseducated. And so I think part of what DE&I work is doing is trying to re-educate people, providing some of that stuff that they didn't learn in school. You know, most of the stuff that I know about U.S. history, I didn't learn in school. I didn't learn it in K through 12. I didn't learn it in college or grad school. I learned it from independent study because these were things I was very interested in. So I think that, you know, there are a lot of misconceptions that are out there because people want to push back against DE&I because it's things in American history that they're very uncomfortable with. And, you know, I say all the time to people that, listen, it is what it is. American history is what it is. There's some very good things about American history. There's some very bad things. There's great things and there are horrible things. That's just a part of the history of any group of people anywhere on the planet. There's good, bad, and ugly. And you have to embrace all of our history to understand how we got to where we are today. All of our journeys as Americans have gotten us to where we are today includes all of these stories that, you know, we've missed out on learning about. And I think that that's part of what DE&I is designed to do, is to provide some context for people.
You know, Reggie, to sanitize the history as if it did not happen. You know, what is there to gain by that? Well, you know, it makes people feel bad. Well, there are a lot of things that make people feel bad. You know, if you eat too much food at night, you know, and you get up in the morning and you're going to feel bad. Feeling bad is a part of life, right? It's a part of living. Absolutely. Nobody. And so to take those things away from people as if people are not going to be able to, you know, exist and sugarcoat the world. It's never been the way things have been. Why do we feel we have to sugarcoat the world for younger people today? The world was not sugarcoated when I was young, right? Right. The world was not sugarcoated when you were young. Why do we act as though children of today are not going to be able to handle that?
Because we've convinced ourselves that that's what we want, therefore that's what they should get. You know, there are some adults that want those things, and they're trying to force children to get the things that they want. Earl, as I've traveled around the state, I've talked to audiences, young and old alike, and I can tell you that young people are thirsty for this history, Earl. They want to know it. They're embracing it in a way that no other generation of Americans ever have. They want to know it. They want to know the details of it because to them, it helps them understand the world that we live in. I don't know how anybody can think that they understand the current climate in the U.S. without studying American history, particularly when it comes to race issues. I don't think you can understand the country.
You know, Reggie, I was taught about the Boston Tea Party, right? Whether it had any impact on my life or not, it was something that they made sure all of us were taught. They didn't do away with that history.
Right.
But they're selective in the history that they want to do away with. And I think that we all should challenge that. Right?
Absolutely.
At the root of what we're dealing with is the fact that people, because they know the history is not, some of this history is not the best. But guess what? The rest of the world knows our history.
And oftentimes they know it way better than we do. Because they're willing to acknowledge it. In America and society is not willing to acknowledge the ugly parts. You know, people used to say this to me all the time, Earl. You know, why are you talking about that, you know, that stuff, Ray? That was a long time ago. And I'm like, listen, as long as we're still learning about the founding fathers, we're still learning about the Mayflower. That was a long time ago. I don't hear anybody saying we should stop talking about George Washington or Thomas Jefferson. I don't hear anybody saying that we should stop talking about, you know, these things that we've all been taught in school that happened a very long time ago. Talk about the good as well as the bad. Talk about the journeys of all people.
The other part of this is people of today had nothing to do with any of those things.
Right.
So they shouldn't be, if they're feeling guilty, they should not be made to feel guilty. They had nothing to do with it. Right?
Yeah, absolutely. There's no reason you should feel guilt about something that somebody else did 150 years ago, 200 years ago, whatever it may be. You had nothing to do with it. You're not responsible for that. You're responsible for what you're doing today. And I think a lot of people think, you know, that, you know, we're teaching white kids in particular to feel guilty about being white. You know, I hear this all the time.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, it's making white kids feel very uncomfortable hearing stuff that white people did to black people and Native Americans or whoever over a long period of history. And I'm like, listen, they did it and they left copious amounts of evidence behind of what they did. They weren't trying to cover it up. They weren't trying to run from it or hide from it. And so they left the evidence intensely. They wanted people to know what they did, Earl. And so for us now to say, oh, these white kids are uncomfortable. What about decades, centuries of black kids being uncomfortable, Earl? You know, I talked to my mother recently about her school experiences and how, you know, she didn't learn anything about black people in school in Mississippi. There was nothing taught about black people other than that, you know, we were slaves. That was it. And so she was very uncomfortable in school. I was uncomfortable in school, you know, not learning certain things about, you know, my family's history. And so now all of a sudden, because some people are saying the white kids are being forced to feel uncomfortable, it's a crisis. Nobody cared when students of color were feeling uncomfortable, and they still feel uncomfortable to this day.
Let's go to the phone lines and Susan from Kenosha. Good morning to you, Susan. Thank you very much for the call. Your thoughts?
Oh, good morning. I am so happy to listen to your radio program, and both of you, it's great. For many years, I have said that this is wrong of what they taught in school, what I learned in school. Everything that I learned, I went to the library to find out. And I think it isn't wrong to make white kids feel uncomfortable because this was done. And we destroyed a lot of lives and we destroyed a lot of people, not only their lives, but their homelands, their everything. There's so much about this to learn. And I think that once we sit down and we learn the true history of this country, we can get up and we can walk and we can and be good neighbors and actually have some sort of equity, some sort of harmony with this country. But until we face up to what we have done, our history, we are always going to have this bickering and fighting. But I say, lay it all on the line, teach it to our kids, and then move on.
Hey, Susan, thank you very much, as always. Reggie?
Yeah, Susan, thank you so much for that. You know, as you were, you know, giving your comments, I was thinking about, you know, what's the value of teaching these things to our kids? And why are white kids, you know, feeling uncomfortable. The reason they're feeling uncomfortable learning these other things, Susan, is because they've been lied to their entire lives. They've been told a version of American history that they knew in some way, shape, or form wasn't really accurate. And now that they're getting this other information, it's causing cognitive dissonance. And people are pushing back against that and saying, you know, white kids are being forced to feel uncomfortable. If they were to talk to students of color, African-American students in particular, Earl, if you were to go into some schools and ask them how they feel about learning about some parts of our history that they didn't learn before, they're excited about it. They can't wait to learn more. They're like, finally, we learned something about ourselves. And so to me, the fact that we are trying to not lie anymore about American history is a good thing.
You know, Reggie, let's go to the phone lines. Hey, Cindy from Appleton. Good morning to you. Your thoughts?
Well, I am a little upset with what's going on with that superintendent of the Green Bay schools. I think this is a whole double standard thing going on here. He's the first black man who's been the superintendent of Green Bay. Apparently made some comments thinking he was off air and now is being scrutinized and on administrative leave. And we had a president of the United States who gets up and tells women these calls like Nikki Haley horrible names, and that the woman he won the loss that won the lawsuit against him, Carol, whatever her name was, you know, he said awful things about her. He's threatened people's lives. He calls military people losers. And then we have a black man who said something off, thinking off air. And I mean, it just, this double standard is just makes me sick.
Hey, Cindy, thank you very much for the call. You know, Reggie, for heaven's sakes, it's 2024, right?
Yeah.
Come on, man.
Yeah. You know, and you know, when you think about, you know, double standards, you know, America has had double standards for a very long period of time. This is nothing new. You know, I think about just going back and looking at my family's history, Earl, tracing my family's history and how hard it was for me to trace my family's history. Whereas I knew white friends of mine that were tracing family history, it was very easy for them. For instance, if I go back to try to look up my family in the census records before 1870, they don't exist by name. Black people were not listed. Enslaved black people, which was a majority of black people in the country, were not listed by name in census records until 1870, after slavery ended. And so, you know, for me, I look at that, I'm like, wait a minute, that's a double standard. Why is it that white people were listed, but black people weren't listed? And it affects my ability to learn who I am. You know, I've always wanted to know more about who I am as a person by studying who my family was, where they came from, their lived experiences.
You know, Reggie, the insanity in all of it is that we're only on this earth for a short period of time, right? And we're all human beings, and you know, we're from the same creation. We're born the same. We die. Doesn't matter. We don't die in nationalism. Mm-hmm. We're not born a Christian and somebody else is born a Muslim. We're born human beings.
Right.
Right. We're not born black and white.
Right.
We're born human beings.
You know, these labels that we use, Earl, are labels that people have created. The idea of
race.
Right. The idea of races, you know, people don't understand that the way that we currently define races in this country is a pretty young concept, only a couple hundred years old, going back to the early 1800s, late 1700s, early 1800s, when people started to delineate people who look different and called it racial groups, right? That's something that's pretty new. And so it isn't real biologically. We're all the same biologically, Earl. And so this concept of race is not real. It's a social construct. But it plays out in our lives as if it is real.
All right. 844-967-2789. Continuing the conversation. Reggie Jackson is my guest.
You're listening to The Shaw, WAUK, Waukesha's home for Matt and Air on Air.
Keeping you informed, entertained, and connected to your local community. Here's Terry Barr with the Civic Media Radio Network.
2024 is a leap year. It may just mean an extra day to some, but here's Bob Bonadur with the Milwaukee Public Museum's Planetarium.
We orbit the sun in 365.25 days, meaning we have leap day February 29th every 4 years.
So our orbit around the sun isn't a perfect number of days. Bonadur says this was figured out for the first time 2,000 years ago.
I think of Julius Caesar back 2,000 years ago was the first calendar to have a leap day because our orbit is actually a little less than 365.25. It's 365.2422. The calendar got out of whack by 11 days, 1582. So imagine 1582, October 4th. The next day was October 15th.
A new calendar created in the 1700s moved the leap day to February. Until next time, I'm Terry Ball.
This is the Shaw WAUK.
All right. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. You can text us that same number. My guess is nationally renowned historian Reggie Jackson. Let's go to the phone lines and Tom from L.A. Good morning to you, Tom.
Good morning, Earl. First off, we the people ultimately are the government and not the corporations, and I hope that we all realize that. Second, thank you, Reggie, for what you're doing. You know, people need to start thinking about people that are people of color. It just means that they have a little more melanin in their skin. You know, it's not like, you know, it's aliens from another planet or anything like that. And I wanted to ask Reggie, do you do any work with Jane Elliott in terms of... you know, what she does. And then also, I just wanted to give a little perspective of a white privileged kid from Wisconsin. When I grew up, it's like if a black kid moved into our small town of 2000 by Eau Claire, first thing everyone would be saying is, does he play basketball? Okay. And again, the stereotypes that go along with that. And then, you know, when I went and lived in Green Bay, it was like every black person, oh, God, is he a Packer? You know what I mean? It's almost like the stereotypes that are there. And that's why a lot of white people don't think that they have white privilege because they look up to, you know, maybe black people because they're not used to seeing them. But in the Milwaukee area, in the Chicago area, where there's lots of black people, that actually people could be, you know, more introduced to, you know, they think, oh, those people are just takers and living on the system and all of these different things. And I think it's really important that we bring out exactly what those, you know, stereotypes are. So therefore we can actually deal with that. And then, and also when it comes to history, like what you're doing, you know, you're teaching history, which takes a little bit of forethought and takes a little bit of education from people. Other than these, again, stereotypes and again, these bullet, you know, points or these bumper stickers that people seem to fall into. And I just wanted to get your kind of feelings on all of that. I apologize.
Hey, Tom, thank you very much for the call. Reggie?
Yeah, thanks, Tom. I'm familiar with Jane Elliott's work. I've never worked with her at all in any capacity, but I'm familiar with the work that she does. And I think you make a good point about stereotypes. So one of the things that I want to share with everybody is when we think about race, you know, race is a social construct. It's not a biological construct. There's nothing biologically that separates us from one another. We're all just the same race. We're all the human race. And, you know, we look at the outside, but we don't look at the inside. You know, if I was to cut Earl, he's going to bleed and the blood will come out red, I guarantee you. You pick anybody that's in the studio today and you cut them, the blood will be the same color. So we're all the same, but we look different on the outside. And so race it, as it developed as a social construct, the problem with it wasn't the fact that we created racial groups, was that we created a hierarchy among racial groups, that certain groups were better than other groups, even among white people. You know, there were certain white people that were considered to be better than other white people. For instance, 100 years ago, when we were having debates about immigration, trying to keep, you know, white people from Southern and Eastern Europe out of the United States as immigrants, the people that we allowed in openly were people from Northern and Western Europe, because they were considered to be better than those white people from Southern and Eastern Europe. And so the hierarchy of race is where the problem is. And as a result of the hierarchy of race, we develop stereotypes of people. We believe that all people that belong to a certain group that we've classified with this label are all the same. And that's just, you know, absolutely foolishness, in my opinion. We have to get past the stereotypes. And one of the ways to get past the stereotypes, from my experience, you know, I've lived with stereotypes and had stereotypes of people from different groups. When you have interactions with people, real interactions with people, the stereotypes eventually just disappear. You see them as who they are. You know, I've gotten to know people from so many different communities traveling and doing the work that I do. I've gotten to know people that I never thought I would get to know, people from the Jewish community, people from, you know, Chinese community, Japanese community, Native American community, so many different communities, LGBTQ plus community. I've gotten to know people as individuals, as friends in those communities. And so now when I see those people, I just see them as who they are. As those individuals, I don't see them as, you know, this Native American guy that I know, or
man, Reggie,
this Jewish guy, whatever. I just see them as who they are.
And the point is so important that it should be repeated. Because I, like you, have friends from all different walks. And I don't see them any way other than a human being, right? I don't ever elevate myself above another human being. I don't have that right, okay? It doesn't matter. We're born, again, the same. And so when we walk around with the belief that we are superior to someone else, I might be able to agree with that if you had everlasting life, right? If there's not a point of your and my demise, which I believe is the day we're born, there's a time for us. You can't be better than anybody,
yeah,
right?
We're all born to die at some point, Earl. All of us will face death at some point. And, you know, for people to walk around feeling that, you know, one group of people is superior to another group of people is just part of the way humans have always seen each other. People always want to find somebody to look down on.
Yeah.
And so in
to
this
be
country,
better than.
Yeah, we've created these racial labels, these groups that we lump people into. And you know, this hierarchy of race developed very early on in the idea of teaching people, you know, to justify slavery. Slavery was justified because people who enslaved African people wanted to be okay with it. So they said, oh, well, we can enslave these people because, well, we're better than them. We're superior to them. They are inferior species. We can deny Native Americans rights. We can take their land. We can do whatever we want to do with them because they are an inferior species. They're not as good as us. So it allows people to justify bad behaviors. In many instances, that's what it's about.
And that hasn't ended. Slavery is still alive and well in the world today, right?
Yeah, slavery is one of the oldest human institutions. People have enslaved each other over, you know, the entire history of humanity. You know, study any society.
Slavery, all right, we got to leave it there. Reggie Jackson will be joining me again next week at this same time. Thank you very much. I really appreciate it, man.
Sure, Earl. Good
all
to
right.
be here.
All right. 844-967-2789. News, weather, and sports, and my next guest.
Whether you're heading down Les Paul Parkway or fighting traffic on the interstates, this is The Shaw, 540 AM and 101.1 FM, WAUK. The Civic Media Network of radio stations across Wisconsin. It's your hometown radio. Refreshed.
covering all the news that affects you with humor and a unique perspective. Matinair on Air with Jane Matinair. Weekdays 10 till noon on The Shaw, 101.1 FM and 540 AM WAUK, and on the Civic Media app.
Fear you may be missing out? We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. Enjoy listening live or catch up by finding the podcast at civicmedia.us or wherever you enjoy listening to your podcasts.
Listening to The Shaw, WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
CBS News.